My guest today, Bob Perry, is a familiar one to takes on the world listeners. An award-winning journalist, he has worked in Washington for four decades and was heralded for breaking some of the major stories on Iran-Contra back in the 80s. In 1995, he founded a Consortium News, which is one of the most important websites for those who wish to find out what the mainstream media is not telling the public about the critical foreign policy issues of our day. One of the most critical of those issues, the widespread efforts to blame Russia, and particularly Vladimir Putin, for putting Trump in the White House, has lately been the focus of his attention with two articles, The Politics Behind Russiagate and When Disinformation is Truth, published Monday, attracting my attention. Welcome once again, Bob Perry, to Takes on the World.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've been devoting a considerable amount of my recent program to countering the political insanity that you have been describing in your recent articles, how the liberal columnists and talking heads have adopted the neocon agenda targeting Russia and what appears to be an anything-goes effort to impeach President Trump. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons why many people, many Democrats, many progressives disdain President Trump. Both his personal behavior and the kind of policies that he has been pursuing. However, the attack line has often focused on this area where Trump has somewhat more realistically than many of the neoconservatives in Washington and many of the liberal hawks in Washington wanted to see if there's a way to cooperate more with nuclear armed Russia rather than having these endless confrontations. So that's become the target, and rather than the Democrats dealing with many of the real reasons why they lost this past election, why they've done so badly, really, not just with in losing the White House now, but also in the Congress, the scapegoat has become Russia. And this, and despite the fact that really no evidence has been presented by really much anybody at this point, it's become a sort of conventional wisdom that Russia first meddled in the election, that it somehow colluded with the Trump people to defeat Hillary Clinton and put Trump in the White House. And the point I've been making is I've pursued these kinds of stories often in the past. I've looked for the evidence and pressed the intelligence community for evidence. And what we've gotten has been really no evidence at all. There was a report that the intelligence community said would be very forthcoming and detailed that was released on January 6th. And we'd been assured by Director of National Intelligence Clapper that he would push for releasing as much of the evidence as he possibly could. And what we got in that report was really no evidence at all. It was just sort of suspicions and why the Russians might have motives. It was very much a one-sided, evidence-free indictment, sort of, but not really based on anything hard. And now further told, and now it's been sort of acknowledged by Clapper and others, that there really was no evidence of any collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. So it's becoming increasingly sounding a bit more like a McCarthyistic witch hunt rather than something based on serious evidence. And it's also been sort of a revisionist history that's gone on here as well, where the Democrats, while they may have been somewhat embarrassed by the disclosures that WikiLeaks produced regarding the Democratic National Committee's tilting the playing field in favor of Clinton versus Bernie Sanders, and then later the disclosures from John Podesta's emails revealing Hillary Clinton's speeches to Wall Street that she was trying to hide. While that may have been somewhat embarrassing to the Democrats, it was not considered a very significant factor in the election. Hillary Clinton herself blamed FBI Director Comey for briefly reopening the investigation into her private email server as the reason that her numbers collapsed in the last week or two of the campaign. So So then to sort of reach back and sort of try to make this other thing much more important than it was, and then to sort of try to pin it on the Russians, even though WikiLeaks says they didn't get the information from the Russians, and the fact that the intelligence community says it really doesn't have any evidence to support what it's, or has not been willing to release any evidence to support its assessments, and that we now are being told that there was no, if there was any Russian meddling, there was no collusion with the Trump campaign, it seems that there's a lot of not there there. And that has become what has become an obsession with many people in the Democratic Party and even on the left who have tried to avoid, frankly, a serious assessment of why Hillary Clinton really lost in favor of trying to whip up this hatred of Russia and this effort to use it to somehow force Trump out of office, apparently. So it's been kind of a very much a situation where the evidence, at least what we've seen so far, what's been provided so far, is not supporting the weight of these very serious claims being made by a lot of people.
Well, it's interesting. It seems the biggest winner of this has been the neocons of the Project for New American Century. Finally, back on March 6th, Robert Kagan, one of the co-founders, weighed in and essentially talked about the fact that the intelligence community had stated, not proved, that there was evidence that any reasonable person should call for a full-blown investigation of Russian interference in our election. And you can't tell the difference between a Tom Friedman or Robert Kagan or a Bill Moyers or Michael Moore or, of course, Rachel Maddow, who has been, you write about her, interesting her career. I remember when she was on Air America Radio, and now she has become the voice of the neocons on MSNBC. Perhaps you could talk about Rachel Maddow, who's a hero or heroine to many of our listeners, I'm sure.
Well, you know, I think there's been this effort to whip up this explanation of why Hillary Clinton lost by blaming it on the Russians, and the evidence simply isn't there. And I know you can call for investigations of anything. That's sort of, in a sense, what Joe McCarthy did. He was trying to investigate the supposed communist menace that was somehow lurking everywhere in the United States, or red under every bed, as they used to say. And he could have said, well, I just want the truth. I'm just trying to, you know, yes, I'm searching around for people who are subversive or don't share my view of America or whatever he was doing. But there's something it feels similar here, that people are saying we need investigations. When I've done a lot of these kinds of investigations. As I've mentioned, when Brian Barger and I at the Associated Press did the first story in 1985 about Nicaraguan-Contra drug trafficking, we had something like two dozen sources who were insiders in these operations, in many cases, describing them to us. We had details. We had documents. We had a really solid body of evidence. And as I say, coming from people who actually knew what had happened, they were people in the Contra movement, people inside the Reagan administration, people inside the Drug Enforcement Administration. These are people that really knew something, and they were telling us. And that was before we wrote a word. We would not have thought about writing something saying, oh, there's some suspicious-looking meetings, whether we need a big investigation. We had the evidence before we made any kind of accusation. But here what we're getting is people saying, well, there's some smoke here, so let's investigate. And in many cases, it's gone way beyond what is reasonable to call for in these sorts of situations. And it's involved in smearing people. Anybody who speaks against this hysteria that's now sweeping the country and certainly much of the Democratic community. Democratic Party is called a Moscow stooge, Putin apologist, and so forth and so on. So it's gotten very ugly in people just saying, hold it, we should have evidence before people start making these charges. And the intelligence community, I thought, acted in an extraordinary way at the last few weeks of the Obama administration in putting out claims that it did not back up. And when you hear the intelligence community say they assess something, even if they assess it with great confidence, what that really means is guessing. As they kind of admit, if you read the report from January 6th, they say, well, an assessment is sort of based on fragmentary information that we kind of put together because of our analytical skills. Well, that's like an educated guess, you might say, but it's not evidence. And we've seen with Rachel Maddow in particular at MSNBC, her building up her ratings. It was a New York Times piece this week about how her ratings have been soaring because she's been providing, I guess, a lot of the angry Democrats this fodder of Russia bashing that they have embraced and she's gone pretty far afield in this. And a lot of the stuff about that Trump may have had business dealings with Russia back in 2004 or 2007, there's a logical flaw here in that nobody thought that Trump was going to become president of the United States back in 2007, or for that matter, really a year ago. All the smart pundits said there was no way he'd win the Republican nomination, if you remember. And no one really thought he'd end up becoming president. It related more to the weakness of the Republican Party and the weakness of the Democratic candidate that enabled him to sort of stumble his way into the White House. But instead of dealing with that reality, there's been this effort to try to whip up this new Cold War. And beyond the fact that the evidence hasn't been presented, in a situation where you're talking about confronting two nuclear-armed countries confronting each other in this very angry, hostile way, leading to the possibility of one side or the other making a miscalculation that could destroy all life on the planet, that would demand, it seems to me, even more care in terms of evidence and in terms of presenting that evidence than the stories that I had done back in the 80s and other times when we would have much more in the way of evidence and sourcing on something like the Contra drug trafficking issue than anything that's been presented here. So it's been, journalistically, a killer, and it has implicated a number of people who really should know better, people who would have been, who are horrified about what Joe McCarthy did, but they're now jumping right in the same way at Consortium News. Because we've pointed out facts of that relate to some of this, we're accused of all kinds of things now. We're not pro-Russian or anti-Russian or anything. We're being journalists, and we're applying common standards, professional standards of journalism, to various claims. It's the same sort of thing I do all the time. And I know some people get angry, like, for instance, if they believe that George Bush blew up the Twin Towers on 9/11. You know, I've gone through that evidence, and I find it completely lacking, and I've said so. And people get angry because they want me to support that, and I don't. And it's a similar here now, because I'm looking at this at these cases and saying this doesn't add up. There's not evidence here. There may become evidence at some point in the future, but it's not here now. And so, you know, there's this effort to discredit people who are simply trying to apply consistent journalistic standards to a very important and complex story.
Robert Perry, it's interesting. The Tom Friedman, who I met back in 1983 in Lebanon when he was actually a good journalist, professional journalist, went really off the rails when he described this, the so-called Russian hacking, as a 9/11 scale event. He said they attacked the core of our democracy. This was a Pearl Harbor scale event. This is lunacy, and you point to, I'm quoting from your article. I didn't actually see the Tom Friedman comment on this, but it's like Friedman bloviating. We're talking about, as you mentioned, we're talking about another nuclear power. And what's interesting is that there are two events that have been erased from our recent history. One is the U.S. role in the overthrow of the elected president of Ukraine, and which Victoria Nuland Kagan's wife was appointed by Obama, and Hillary Clinton's former press secretary was very much involved with that. And now Ukraine begins with the takeover of Crimea, not the coup against Yanukovych, and articles describing what happened to the Democratic National Committee describe Russian hacking it, but they don't describe what was revealed. And one of the most dishonest articles you may have probably saw in the New Yorker, a major article by David Remnick and two other people whose names I didn't know, which is like laid out the case against Russia, and again distorts both of these events. It's kind of mind-boggling, even though if you go back in American history, you see that the liberal media has endorsed and supported America's wars and foreign policy almost uncritically until they couldn't do it anymore. Perhaps you comment on that.
Well, we saw what happened in 2002 and 2003, where many of the same players, people like David Remnick, you know, the supposedly great liberal editor of the New Yorker, was also totally on board with the WMD fictions and the invasion of Iraq, one of the most devastatingly disastrous foreign policy initiatives in recent American history, maybe all of American history. It created problems that are still reverberating to today and have not been solved. But David Remnick was all for that. So was Tom Friedman. so many of these people. And one of the points I make about Rachel Maddow is that she emerged. I actually remember hearing one of her first broadcasts. It was in August of 2005. She was a summer fill-in at Air America, and she did a very interesting, very smart, very thorough piece about the Katrina hurricane disaster and tying it to Bush's decisions to go to war in Iraq, and including the fact that much of the Louisiana National Guard had been sent to Iraq, so it wasn't around there to help save people when the flooding hit. But at the time, by summer of 2005, it didn't require a lot of journalistic courage to criticize Bush about the Iraq War. Some of us were raising the questions back in 2002 and 2003 and getting our brains beat in. We've been being called all kinds of names. Back then, we were Saddam apologists. But many of the people who were doing that, running that kind of bashing of honest journalists, were these journalists who were all embracing Colin Powell's speech at the UN, and they were embracing Bush's claims about WMD, and they were embracing the invasion of Iraq. So the question becomes, in those moments, how do you behave as a journalist? Do you stick to the journalistic standards, or do you go with the flow and become popular and become more successful? The interesting thing is, it turns out that what people used to say, that there are safety in numbers. Well, there are safety in numbers, because many of these people were completely wrong about Iraq, but they did it as a pack, they ran as a herd, and so virtually none of them got hurt. They all basically moved on. There was almost no accountability for the Iraq fiasco, even though 4,500 American soldiers died and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis died, and disorder was spread across the Middle East and now spilling into Europe. But these guys walked away from it, and they didn't just walk away. They maintained or enhanced their positions. Remnick was editor of the New Yorker then. He's editor of the New Yorker now. Fred Hyatt was the editorial page editor of the Washington Post then. He's in the same job today. So a lot of these key people just went on. And with Rachel Maddow, there was always the question in my head is, once she sort of gained the success and the fame and the money, would she still stand up for the journalistic values, or would she continue to sort of play the game? And I think the way she's behaved over this Russia issue, she has put her ambitions ahead of journalism. And it's helped her, I guess. It's helped MSNBC. They get more, their ratings are up, they're making more money. So as long as you're making money and going with the pack, it's great. But that's the problem here. You've got a lot of these people who were wrong, and they've been wrong over and over again, now they're back at it again, and they think they've got some big hot story. And even though there's been this paucity of any evidence to support it, they just keep repeating it, and it's become sort of everyone knows it to be true, just like they knew that the WMD was true. If Americans heard that for months and months, and they watched Colin Powell give his speech before the UN, understandably, I'm sure many Americans came to believe it. Wasn't true, but they came to believe it. And much is the same thing happening here, that we all know that the Russians tried to meddle in our elections, that they put Trump in office, that they controlled Trump somehow. It doesn't matter that there's no evidence of this. And it, as I pointed out, WikiLeaks, which is the organization that probably knows the most about who gave them the material because they were the ones who got the material, they have said, both Assange and Ambassador Craig Murray, who is an associate who actually had some contact with one of the supposed leakers, have said that these were American insiders. Now, is it possible they're wrong? Yeah. Could they have been misled? I suppose, sure. But that you can't just ignore, as much of the press has, the fact that the people with the direct evidence say it's not true. And when we pressed the intelligence community to give us evidence that it was true, they came up with this report on January 6th, which was a joke. Most of it was about how RT years ago had a, you know, not this election, but I guess in the election in 2020, they allowed a debate on of the third party candidates. That was one of the arguments that the U.S. intelligence community made, that somehow RT and Russia was undermining our democracy because they allowed a debate on among third-party candidates. Just stop and think for a second how crazy that point is. Because someone allowed Americans to debate issues when they're being excluded from the major American networks, that's somehow an assault on American democracy. I mean, there's a madness to all this that has not been, that we haven't really assessed in a careful way. And the U.S. intelligence community has been up to its eyeballs in this. So I think there should be just, in a way, people should start stepping back and really, before this thing gets completely out of control, demanding real evidence. If you watch, there was just a press conference with Congressman Nunes and Congressman Schiff, the chairman and ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. And although they had some differences, they seemed to be saying, at least Nunes was saying, that he has seen no evidence of that the Russians colluded with the Trump people. And that's also the position taken a week or so ago on one of the I Meet the Press, I think it was, by the Obama's DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, Clapper, who was behind this sort of silly report on January 6th, but he also said there was no collusion. There was no evidence of collusion. So when you're getting that kind of material, that kind of rather definitive statement, it undermines this the kind of certainty that we've been hearing from the likes of Remnick or Maddow and others.
Well, it's interesting, the conclusions that the 17 intelligence committees came up with were kind of ludicrous in the sense that they needed 17 intelligence committees to tell us why Putin would favor Trump.
That's also a bit of a mistake, because there was no, as far as I know, there has been no national intelligence estimate. That's when the 17 intelligence agencies are pulled together and they collectively give a judgment. But in those situations, there are also dissents. You would get like one of the agencies saying, "I don't really agree with this point of view," or "Here's why we disagree," and that happened in 2002, if you remember, on the WMD, where there actually were dissents, but they were removed from what was then released publicly in support of the WMD fictions. So here we have the report that was issued on January 6th was just three of the agencies: the DNI, the CIA, and I forget the third one, but it was. There were three of the agencies put together that report. Now, because the DNI was involved, Director of National Intelligence, people sort of say, well, he's sort of the overseer of the of the entire community, so therefore that's how they throw the 17 in. But as far as I know, the the intelligence agency of the Coast Guard hasn't weighed in, or a lot of these, and we don't know if there were dissents, because all we got was this 25-page report. It's like seven or so pages were about how terrible how much they hate RT's broadcast. But so there was, and the rest of it was pretty much that the Russians had a motive to do this, because they supposedly disdained Hillary Clinton and thought Trump might be nicer to them. But the other point that they leave out is there's a counterpoint to that same argument, which is one of the reasons that the Russians might well not have done any of this is that it was expected, as everyone expected pretty much, that Hillary Clinton would win. So if you sort of pricked her with this, with some of these minor disclosures that came out and had rather nominal effect on the campaign, and she still won, which she was expected to, she would be angry. And if you were Putin, you'd have to assume that the U.S. intelligence community would pick up on any Russian efforts to do this sort of thing. So if you'd have to assume that you'd get caught, because the NSA has these extraordinary powers to pick up these kinds of efforts, you'd have to assume all you're going to do is anger the next president of the United States and make her even more willing to be aggressive against you. So I'm not saying that's what happened, but I'm saying, if you want to make the argument that the Russians had a motive to meddle in the election, you also should have made the point, to be fair, that there was also a motive for them not to. But this was not an effort to be a balanced. Here's the pros and cons of why this may or may not have happened. This was an effort to indict. It was a prosecutor's brief, if you will, except it was, unlike most prosecutors' briefs, that it had no actual evidence in it. It was just kind of smoke and mirrors and this possible motive the Russians might have. So if you're dealing with something as sensitive as this, as Friedman's talking about it being Pearl Harbor and 9/11, there were two things that happened after Pearl Harbor and 9/11. After both incidents, the United States went to war, shooting wars. Now, if Friedman is right in his analysis that we have to treat this like Pearl Harbor, that suggests we have to go to war with Russia. And exactly. If we go to war with Russia, that could actually end up being the war to end all wars, because it could end up being the war that ends human civilization. So instead of this sort of casual, throwing around of charges and suspicions, it just seems to me that an honest journalist, a serious journalist, would demand hard evidence before making any sort of accusation, or even some raising all these suspicions. You really should have the evidence first, not the evidence later. I've never, for all my years in, you said 40 years in Washington, that's true, and even longer in journalism, I always approached it that you needed the evidence first before you made an accusation against somebody or some group. You don't say, well, gee, I'm suspicious of something, so, let's push for an investigation. You present evidence, and then based on that evidence, there can be further investigation. There can be evaluation of that evidence. There can be all kinds of things. But you don't just start with no evidence.
Well, it's interesting that how other times New York Times columnists have jumped on the same wagon. Paul Krugman is totally as deranged as Tom Friedman is on this. And the other day, Nicholas Kristof did the same. They're accepting as a fact that Russia interfered with our election and put Trump in the White House. That's the way they're behaving. And it's insane. These are journalists with considerable experience, and they have literally gone off the rails since Trump got the nomination for the presidency. The accusation that the Russians were trying to undermine America's faith in the political process, there have been countless polls taken long before Trump even was on the horizon, showing Americans had lost faith in the political process. And then the idea that the Russians could undermine Hillary Clinton's reputation more than it has already been done in this country, that's another joke. I mean, if that's all they could come up with, that's not very much, even without evidence.
Right. Well, I mean, I think as people say, that the Americans have done a very good job themselves discrediting our electoral process. I mean, and certainly the fact that the two candidates who were put up by the two major parties were as disdained and even hated as they were, that wasn't the Russians doing. That was the fact that the Republican Party ended up being kind of taken over by a person who was substantially unfit to serve, who never had even held a public office before, and is a dubious grasp of reality. And then you had on the other side a corporate-oriented Democrat who was widely despised by large segments of the American population, and like Trump, had historically high negatives. And so the two parties put these two candidates up. In the case of the Democratic Party, it was largely that the Democratic establishment, the DNC, tilted the playing fields in favor of Hillary, and the use of the superdelegates who are unelected. These are party insiders, and who now have something like 20% of the vote to decide who gets to get the nomination. And that was, and they broke almost overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. So, in other words, unelected delegates basically got to run the show. Now, and part of the argument for Hillary Clinton, that where she did end up, of course, winning more votes than Sanders in the primaries, but a lot of that was because people were being told, this is inevitable, we need to end the process, we need to unite, Hillary's going to get it, so you shouldn't vote for Sanders. So I think a lot of Democrats said, oh, yeah, okay, let's just wrap this up. And but that was in large part because the Democratic Party leadership dictated as such. Now, so that's the reality of what happened. And as Hillary Clinton herself said, what caused her, she felt, to lose the election was the decision by FBI Director Comey to reopen the investigation into her use of a private email server. And that was an entirely self-inflicted wound, by the way. The Russians had nothing to do with her decision to use a private email server. She apparently didn't want to have her communications accessible to historians or to political opponents. So she went outside the normal system. You know, if you remember, even Barack Obama as president had to give up his BlackBerry or cell phone, whatever he had at the time, because the president of the United States was not allowed to keep his own email operation. He had to go through the government system. So, but the Secretary of State chose not to, and she made that decision. And then the idea that so it was investigated, and there clearly were problems with this. Even she admitted it was a mistake, and there were serious issues about whether or not she was exposing classified material to possible hacking and possible capture by hostile forces to the United States government. Now she was chose the Comey decided not to prosecute, if you remember, but then he reopened the investigation later. Now, unless you think that the Russians also control Comey, the rest of that stuff wouldn't have even mattered, according to Hillary Clinton. She said that if it weren't for Comey reopening that investigation briefly in the last week or two of the campaign, she would have kept her numbers up and she would have won the election. So you have this sort of strange effort to rewrite what we all saw happen to make the Russians somehow at the center of it. When even if you want to accept that they may have hacked into these accounts and maybe somehow used, maybe like we've all seen the FX show The Americans. Maybe they've got some people that look like Americans that are really Russian agents, and they maybe slipped them the material to slip to WikiLeaks. Even if you want to assume all that, which there's no evidentiary basis, you still have problems trying to sort of assess that this was the reason that Trump won. There were a lot of reasons Trump won, and most of them related to the weakness of the Democratic Party's candidate. But I guess people don't want to look at that. And I think the Democrats, by their failure to begin a serious autopsy of what went wrong, instead they've been off on this Russia tangent, they're kind of hurting themselves in many ways. They could be looking at how can they start presenting programs and making political arguments that would appeal to some of these disillusioned working class former Democrats in the Rust Belt to bring them back into the fold. Instead, they're doing this.
Well, I predicted before, with Trump's victory, that there would be a large protest movement that would develop, as opposed, if Clinton had been elected, they would have gone the same snooze we saw during Obama. But it seems the so-called resistance movement has now been co-opted, and instead of trying to deal with Trump on the issues, that they have made it into a neocon campaign, a total disaster. Even worse than having Trump in the White House is to having liberal so-called authorities and organizations across the board all calling for a special investigation. And none of these people, I've pointed out, ever did that to call into the origins of the Iraq War, as if this Russian so-called intrusion was more important than what the United States did in Iraq.
Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that. The there has been this. I've asked this question to some Democrats who understand the danger of the neoconservatives, and I've followed the neoconservatives since the 1980s when they sort of got their real footing in the Reagan administration, and they kept growing from that. I used to know Bobby Kagan when he was a young State Department a political appointee back in the 80s. Now, of course, he's a big shot. He endorsed Hillary Clinton. He's married to Victoria Nuland, who was the Assistant Secretary of State involved with the Ukraine crisis. So you have, so I've known these people, and I've known Democrats who understand how dangerous these folks can be. And I've sort of asked them, I said, do you feel a little bit uneasy sort of being in bed with the neocons on this one? I mean, the neocons want to hype up the Cold War, the new Cold War, because they can, there's a lot there, a lot of money to be made by the military-industrial complex. We're going to rebuild our nuclear arsenal. We're going to do all these different things. That's what the neocons want. They also want to make the Russians into the boogeyman so they can use that to justify escalating the war in Syria, possibly going to still reviving their hopes of attacking Iran, doing regime changes in these different places. The neocons are even pushing for regime change in Moscow. They think that's a good idea. That, of course, is even more dangerous because if you were even to be successful somehow and somehow overthrow Putin, you're not going to get some revised Yeltsin character. You're probably going to get some extreme ultra-nationalist taking over, and then you might actually, you might say, gee, Mother Russia needs to be protected. I'm going to launch these nuclear bombs. So there's a lot of craziness here, but the Democrats have not seemed to notice that they're getting in bed with some very dangerous folks.
Well, at that point, we're going to step out of bed. Bob Perry, it's been a pleasure having you on the air again with Takes on the World, bringing some sanity in a world and airwaves that desperately need it. Thanks so much for being our guest today. Looking forward to your next article and having you back here again. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. This is Jeff Blankfort. Thank you for listening.